Business success usually comes to those who are too busy to be looking for it. Join RVK for the award-winning RV on Business Show every Tuesday at 12 midday. It's not about thinking out of the box. There is no box. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome to 101.9 High FM. It's 11 minutes past 12. Thank you so much for joining us. And for those of you who didn't know, as of the 4th of February 2025, the South African Reserve Bank, sometimes known as the SARB, changed the repo rate to 7.5%, which was a 25% basis reduction on January the 30th, 2025. Now, this is stuff we hear every quarter. We hear it on the radio. We see it on the news. We read it in the newspapers. What I'd like to do is to spend today's show unpacking what that really means. And I suppose the question that everybody's going to ask is, why is it important to me? What do I really care about the repo rate, about the interest rate? And the answer is really simple. In a nutshell, if you have a bond, a mortgage bond on your property, if you owe money on your credit cards, if you have a revolving credit with the bank, or on the other side, if you have money in the bank, not so much in a current account, but in a fixed deposit, a notice account, a 32-day account, a savings account, then all of a sudden the interest rate becomes important to you. When does the interest rate become crucial? The interest rate becomes crucial when you are somebody who is living on what we call a fixed income. In other words, you have retired, you had X amount of money at retirement, you have now put it into an investment where it is giving you a return based on the current interest rate. Maybe some of your money is locked up for longer, and therefore the interest rate might not change because it was fixed up front. But for many people, a portion of their money is sitting in an account where they draw out an amount of interest every month. And if the interest rates change, that will affect the amount of money they are earning as their monthly stipend, depending on what happens with the interest rates. So what we're going to do today is we're going to go all the way back to the very beginning. We're going to first of all demystify terms that we hear, terms like the window of the Reserve Bank, the interbank lending rate, the 24-hour rate, the overnight rate. And we're going to take the mystique out of that because it's actually not that complicated. There are just different terms that have been used over the years, and every country uses a similar term. And then we're going to go and understand how the interest rate is actually determined. Who determines it? When is it determined? And why is it determined? And then we'll go look at how it affects each one of us on an ongoing basis. So let's start, I suppose, at the very beginning. And the very beginning is, what is the interest rate and how does it really get set? So the interest rate, very simply, is the amount of money that is charged by a lender to a borrower. We know there's a concept in Jewish law that one is not allowed to charge another Jewish person interest, and we call that in Hebrew ribit, which means interest. And if you lived in Israel, then the term ribit becomes very colloquial because it's used every day when you talk about what rate am I being charged on my bank, etc., etc. So that is exactly what the interest rate is. So for example, if a person lends somebody else 1,000 Rand and they say the interest rate is 10%, the first question is, 10% for how long? Is it 10% per month? Is it 10% for the year? And the answer is obviously what we call APR, annual percentage rate. It's a rate for the year. And at 10%, one might think, sure, that's quite cheap. If you think that, you are a South African or someone from Southern Africa. because European rates, American rates, Middle Eastern rates are a lot lower. For example, if you had to get a mortgage bond now in Israel, you could work it out at about 5%. 4 years ago, you could borrow money to buy a car at about 2.2%, where at South Africa, it was running at over 10%. So if you were bringing money in, you had to do those calculations as to where would your money work best for you. But coming back to interest rates. So you borrow 1,000 rand at 10% per year. So 10% of 1,000 is 100. So at the end of the year, if you borrow the money on the 1st of January, on the 31st of December, you need to deposit 1,100 rand back to the organization or the individual who gave it to you. And the corollary also exists. If you put 1,000 rand into the bank and you leave it there and you don't touch it, and the interest rate is 10%, you should have 1,100 rand in your bank account at the end of that term. Now, I know there are people screaming at me now, like, how can you say such a ridiculous thing? And they're talking about two things. First of all, the compound rate on a monthly or a quarterly basis. And second of all, the costs. So the truth is, if you put in 100 rand, 1,000 rand at 10%, you would have 1/12 of 10% in your bank account after the month of January. So February's interest that you charge would earn you slightly more than January, and so it would compound going forward. I don't know if any of you remember Mary Poppins, the story with the bank's children in the bank, where it said a pound or a penny invested wisely goes a long way. And that's what it's all about. It's about getting your money to work for you. And the opposite, and as I said, the corollary also applies. If you borrow money, then all of a sudden you get charged interest on the interest. And it is very important to keep track of that. We'll unpack it a little bit later. But the term that I'd like you to remember from this segment is the magic of compound interest. And that is interest growing on itself. To summarize it in a very simple way, if you had to become a farmer today, you had a piece of land, and the only thing you had was one millicob. So you've got one millicob, and on that millicob, let's say, for example, there are 40 kernels of millet. You now go and plant each kernel in a row. So you've got 40 rows, and you've got one per kernel per row. As that millet plant grows, you are now going to have 40 kernels that have grown up into plants, each one with three or four kernels on it. So all of a sudden, you're getting 4, 8, 12, maybe 120, or maybe 160 kernels from the one kernel that you've put in. If you then take all of those and plant them, you'll run out of space very quickly. That's provided you don't need to sell them, and provided that you don't need to cash them in order to generate running costs, and to pay those costs. But that's the concept of how planting one small thing can grow into something a lot bigger. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will continue talking interest.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 High FM. Continuing our discussion about interest rates. Thank you so much for all the questions coming through. Please maybe hold off because it does block up the screen. And let's get through the example or the examples that I've given and that I've prepared. And hopefully a lot of your questions will get answered. The first thing I quickly want to demystify is the difference between simple interest and compound interest. And that's what I mentioned earlier, that sometimes a bank will give you interest on your interest, because if they pay the amount of interest that's due in that month, and then they compound it for the next month, in other words, you're getting 10% per year, but it's paid out monthly, you will end up with more than 10% at the end of the time. Because it's a interest is principal, is the amount of money you put in, times the rate, the interest rate, times time. So time could be 1 or it could be 12. And it's 12 divided by 12, so to speak, because it's on a monthly basis. So you're always looking to make sure you're getting compound interest on the money that you are saving, and you'd want to try use simple interest on the money that you're borrowing. Nice in theory, but in practice, these things are set. Whether it's fair or not fair, the most important thing is that you are aware, you upskill and educate yourself. There is no longer an excuse for not being aware of what you're being charged. Everything's available, everything is explainable, and everything is accessible. So make sure that you get yourself upskilled so that you are in control of the outcome, even if you don't like it, and even if it's not ideal. At least you know what to expect. So let's talk about interest rates in the different scenarios that we can look at. So the first areas that we spoke about was home loans, personal loans, credit cards, and these each have different rates. So for example, the home loan is usually set at the current interest rate. If you are a client with a good credit standing, you might get a mortgage bond slightly below it. If you haven't been able to run manage your accounts all that well, you might be charged a slightly higher interest rate. And the reason for that is that the bank feels that you are a higher risk, and therefore they want to recoup their money in a more secure way. Personal loans and credit cards usually have the highest interest rates. Credit cards tend to be the highest in the markets, and they change from bank to bank. So please just be aware that there is a different way that it's charged. You might be at a certain bank where you've been there for many years, had a credit card for many years, managed it well, and you have a very low interest rate. But now you want to get a fancier card, so to speak, for whatever it is you're doing a lot of overseas traveling, or you want to keep it for emergencies. Just be aware that comes at a price. Not only at the price for the interest that you charge on the money that you borrow, but also on a monthly fee on that card. When it comes to putting money in the bank, one needs to understand one or two basic principles. Number one, the bank will give you a rate. Sometimes for a type of account, the rate will be between, let's say, 8 and 8.7%. And what does that depend on? Usually it depends on the amount of money you put in. So certain accounts in a minimum of, let's say, of 300,000, you'll get 8%. The moment you go over 350 or 400, that'll go up to 8.7. So that's the way that works. If you have a fixed deposit, in other words, you're telling the bank, I want to put my money away for 5 years, then I want you to think about the adverts that you've seen on the highways for certain banks offering interest rates that are seemingly ludicrous. And those are often the accounts that they are advertising. They don't say it as such, but what is implied is that if you give us money for a longer term, we will give you an interest rate that is really, really favorable. Your answer might be, but yes, maybe I could do better in unit trust. Maybe I could do better investing it in the market. But we need to clarify one thing right here and right now. What is the difference between saving, investing, and gambling? All three of them are ways of making money, seemingly. The difference is risk, and in exactly that order. Saving means you take money, put it in the bank. You know what rate you're going to get if it's a fixed deposit, and it's often guaranteed for that period. You could put it in a general savings account, a money market account, and then the interest rate that you get will move as the interest rate is changed by the South African Reserve Bank. But what is the risk of you losing your money unless you go to VSP Bank, whatever it was called? If you use the big banks in South Africa, the chances are almost zero. When it comes to investing, you want to invest in order to do better than you would have done in the bank. And the only way to do that is to take on a little bit of risk. Expose your money to the markets, to local markets, to international markets, and go on the ride. And why I say that is that you will never have a negative month if you put your money in the bank. If you put it in the bank, you will see your money grow steadily, month by month by month. And if you leave it there long enough, you can see the interest that you earn every month increase steadily on a monthly basis. But if you invest the money, even if it is in a low-risk investment, what we call a conservative portfolio, you might have one month that when you look at your investment at the end of the month, it's worth less than it was in the beginning. Because that's the nature of markets. They tend to be volatile. Volatile means they go up and down. But up and down means that if you're going from Cape Town to Joburg, just because we are 5,000 feet higher than Cape Town doesn't mean you just go on a straight ramp all the way up. There are times you go downhill, there are times you go sharply uphill, and there are times you just drive flat and it seems that you're not going up. And that's more of what an investment is all about. Over the long term, you might do better than you would in the bank, but you should expect times of ups and downs and flats. Gambling, on the other hand, is something that, in my opinion, should be banned and should be avoided. It is all about risk. There's no guarantee, and it's just stupidity. My feeling has always been I've worked too damn hard for my money to risk it on chance. And that's all I want to say about gambling. Right, let's move on to the next thing. What factors affect the interest rate? So, in other words, why is the interest rate changed? These wise men sit around the bank, the governor of the Reserve Bank, and his wise men and women sit around and they have this discussion. And sometimes they'll say it was a split decision. Sometimes they'll say it's unanimous. And I don't think I've ever heard that. There's always one consenting voice, which is good, which means that people are thinking and they have an opinion. But why do we change interest rates? So we change interest rates for a few reasons. In South Africa, the most important reason for changing the interest rate is inflation. We are an economy that is interest rate focused. We have a target range of between 3 and 6 or 4 and 6%, and we need to keep our interest rates between that window. The reason for that is that once we do that, we can keep inflation under control. How does an interest rates affect inflation? And how does inflation affect the interest rates? It is complicated and it's multifaceted. You know, we could simply say, to give you an example, you breathe air in, it goes into your lungs, the lungs extract the oxygen and put it into your bloodstream. Me, as a non-medical person, will say it makes perfect sense. Thank you very much. Do you want to know more? No, I don't need to know more. If I'm battling to breathe, I'll get some sort of pump and it'll open up my airways. But a specialist who deals in that area would want to know every detail and every facet of that process. But when it comes to interest rates, it's a similar thing. There are many things that affect it. But the most important thing that interest rate and inflation have in relation is this. If money is cheap, in other words, like it was before the big crash that we had a few years ago, overseas you could borrow money for almost zero interest. And not only that, you could borrow money on a property where you had already borrowed money. So if you had a home worth $1 million and you borrowed $1 million and now you wanted another 500,000, there were stories of the bank assessor driving past looking at your house and saying, yeah, it's worth 1.7. We can give him another 500,000. But when the crash came, it wasn't even worth 500,000. So all of a sudden, you had money borrowed against assets that didn't really have value. What happens? People borrow that money and they go and they spend that money. And then we go into an area called supply and demand, where there are more people chasing an item that is not readily available. So, for example, I'm going to give a funny example because it just popped into my mind. Maybe many of you will remember it. Many, many, many years ago in South Africa, Cadbury did a run of Chalav Yisrael chocolate. And the South African Jewish community, rightly so, went ballistic for it. The demand was incredible, but it was limited to, I think, a box per person. I don't know how they did it, but the price of those chocolate bars could have been anything, because we as consumers knew there was a short window and we wanted as much of it as possible. So if a chocolate bar is 20 Rand, we would have been happy to pay 50 Rand. And then the black market starts, where I've got a bar that I paid 50 bucks for, but I can sell it to Craig for 70. And all of a sudden, the value of chocolate just goes out of the window, when the actual value of the chocolate is 20 bucks. Same thing happens with property. All of a sudden, property seems that it's a good value. I can get a mortgage very easily. I can buy and buy and buy. And the prices go up and up and up because people are fighting over this property. And that's what we call inflation. So how do we stop this inflation? How do we stop that every time you walk into a shop to buy bread, milk, mealie-meal, meat, you see the price ticking up slowly, slowly? How does the government stop that? It makes the price of money more expensive, which means that all of a sudden, if I want to borrow money, instead of getting charged 6 or 8%, I'm now getting charged 10%. The bank might turn around to me and say, "Sir, you can't afford this. We would have given it to you 2 years ago or 6 months ago when the rates were lower because you were paying back less, but now you're paying more. We won't lend you the money. Therefore, I can't spend the money. If I can't spend the money to go buy that 50 Rand slab of chocolate that is really 20, eventually the price will come back down to 20. The supply will come down to meet the demand." And that's the theory in practice, and that's what it is in actuality, the way it pans out. There are many different ways of understanding it, and you might say to me, "Yes, but certain things go up every single year." Like medical aid inflation is an average between 8 and 10% every year regardless, and then there's still benefits that are cut. Yes, but that's got very little to do with inflation. That's got to do with what we call medical research inflation. That's got to do with the cost of supplying medicines and medical assistance to people that tends to get better over time, but more expensive. So that's a slightly different animal. Things like food are not only impacted about what we spend on them, it's also what we call the input costs. What does it cost to bring, for example, the seed from another country to grow a crop? What does it cost electricity to pump the water? What is the cost for the fuel in the vehicles that manage the process? So there's different things that come into that. But in a nutshell, that's what the process is. Now, the interest rates will work in what we call cycles. You'll have an increasing interest rate cycle and a decreasing interest rate cycle. Where are we now? We are in the process of a decreasing interest rate cycle in South Africa. So the interest rates are coming down and down and down. So the average person who's been paying their bond for the last 10 years, for example, will get a letter or an SMS, some notification from the bank that the interest rates have changed. Now, what happens if you are paying 10,000 Rand on your bond? You might now pay, for example, and this is just a pure thumb suck, 9,500 Rand. And you think, what a relief. I've got that extra little bit in my pocket. Just a little secret. It's the most worst kept secret around, and please do your best to spread it. If you keep paying that extra amount, you knock off money from the capital that you owe the bank on your bond. And your bond ultimately gets paid off a lot quicker. So if you can be in touch with your bank, if you can afford it, and say to them now and in the future, should the interest rate change in a decreasing manner, keep my repayments the same. Unfortunately, you can't say that when the bank increases, when the interest rates increase, then you would have to pay slightly more. There you would do yourself a major favor. There the magic of compound interest would work to your advantage, because you are paying off more of the capital slightly quicker. Before we go to the break, I just want to address something that I see is coming through hard and sharp on the SMS line. And this is the reality that faces not only South Africans, but people all around the world. But let's talk about South Africa in particular. South Africa is becoming more and more expensive as a country to live in. There was a time in South Africa where utilities, where electricity, your water was cheap. And let's not be tongue in cheek and say, well, we don't get that stuff anymore. But the bottom line is, you really pay a lot for those utilities. Plus, South Africans are paying for security, costs that other countries look at can't begin to fathom what you pay for armed response, proactive response, alarms, beams that need to constantly be fixed and repaired. These are ongoing costs that South Africans have. So when the interest rate comes down, all of a sudden, any relief you get is tremendous. However, so many South Africans are not saving enough for retirement. And that's mainly to do with the fact that a lot of them are tied up in debt. And that debt is primarily in credit cards. Easier to obtain than other areas, and a way of spending money where you can sort of move it around on a monthly basis. One of the highest interest rates that you can get for borrowing money is on your credit cards. So please just be aware of that. Try to keep that under control. I know it's difficult at times, but if we can try and get ourselves into a position where we're earning money on our money and not paying money on the money we've borrowed, all of a sudden things will look a little bit more rosy. Let's take a quick break. We're coming towards the end of the show. Got a lot to cover. I'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
We are coming towards the end of the show. Let's get back to the very beginning. We've explained how interest rates work, how we burn the borrowing and all that. But let's go back to this rate, repo rate. This term, sorry, repo rate. What does that mean? Repo is a shortening for the word, the repurchase rate, which is the rate that which the central bank, the South African Reserve Bank, the central bank, lends money to commercial banks. In other words, it could be the rates that the central bank is lending money to banks should they need the money for a sure or short term or overnight. So that's usually what it is. It's the rate that they charge it. However, when they borrow money from the Reserve Bank, that's often to balance their book because banks need to keep a certain amount of money in reserve. And if they come towards the end of the day, and for whatever reason, people have borrowed and they no longer have the minimum reserve, they can borrow that money from the Reserve Bank to bulk up their reserves. But then that means they can lend the money out. And there's a difference between the repo rate and the mortgage rate or the interest rate. And that's usually between 3 and 5%, depending on the country and depending on how it works. And that's how the banks make money. So if you go back to banks in the old days, the way they made money, or the way money lenders made money, Merchant of Venice, as we all know, is a moot point when it comes to Jews and lending money. But it was all about borrowing money at a rate and lending it out at a higher rate. So if you borrow money at 5%, you lend it out at 7%, you're making 2% difference. And that's where your profit comes in. So there is a discussion today. Why are banks charging us bank fees? Why are banks charging us to do this? Why a cash withdrawal fee, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Often because the financial stability of a bank is not sufficient just on the money that they lend. In order to make sure that the bank is profitable, they need to make sure they're charged for certain services. A classic example in South Africa is if you go and borrow money and you draw out cash, the bank is going to charge you more money for cash than if you ask for a banker's check, if those things still exist, or another way, or a transfer where cash wasn't involved. Why? Because to move cash costs money. Those Green Rennies trucks or the coin trucks or the different companies charge money. That is their business. moving money from one place to another, valuables from one place to another. And you need to understand that that cost is going to be passed on to you. So in summary, interest is part of our daily life. It is something that is very positive and something that can be very negative. It's what we call proverbial double-edged sword. If you are able to take advantage of interest, where you can leave money so that you can earn interest on it, it's wonderful. We all know that pick and pay strategy has been, since its very, very founding, is that they only pay their suppliers on 60 or 90 days. So you need to wait 3-4 months before pick and pay will pay you. In the meantime, our families have bought that item, and pick and pay can sit on that cash and generate interest on that cash. So it's money for free, so to speak. If you want to work with pick and pay and you want to get into their supply chain, that's the risk that you need to take. And it's similar with any of the other stores. However, in a decreasing interest rate market, it is important that if you want to put money away, you look at what you'll get for a longer term and try lock it in at a higher rate. But if for whatever reason you've always wanted to get something and one couldn't afford it, but all of a sudden with the interest rates coming down and this item will add value to your life, I don't know what it is. It's a lifestyle item. It's something that you've always felt would be good for you and your family. But now with the lowest interest rates, you're putting it in. You need to do the maths very carefully and look at the different scenarios as to what happened when the interest rate cycle changes. And what happens if the interest rates go back up? There's a lot more to discuss. There is the carry trade between the different interest rates around the world. There's the window of interest rates, which is the difference between what is charged in one country and another country. So it might be worth your while taking your money, investing in South Africa in government bonds or fixed deposits, because you're getting a guaranteed return without any risk of your money, even though you don't plan to keep it there for a long time. So interest rate is complicated, but it also affects us every single day in a very, very simple way. And I hope I've answered a lot of your questions. If there's anything outstanding, please let me know. Please be in touch. Please send me an email or send me a WhatsApp on the Studio 9. Craig, thanks for pushing the buttons. Everybody, thanks for listening. We'll chat to you next week.